Welcome to the Birthflow Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's story is with Tara Langsdorf, who is a self-described type A. While pregnant, Tara finished her second master's degree and took a promotion managing a team of 25. She tends to have a plan for everything. So what did she do when her birth didn't go quite according to plan and she found herself in labor and developing preeclampsia? Stay tuned. This episode of Birthflow is brought to you by Expectful, an evidence-based guided meditation app created specifically for those trying to conceive, pregnant, or new moms. Learn more and sign up for a free one-month trial at expectful.com/birthful. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Simply Breastfeeding, a prenatal breastfeeding course to help nursing parents feel confident with their newborns. Learn more at birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding and use the code Birthful for 15% off. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thanks again for all the love you constantly give the show. I so appreciate it. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. And to best support this podcast, support its sponsors, which in today's case are Simply Breastfeeding and Expectful. Also, if you want to truly prepare and even enjoy those first few weeks with your newborn and figure out how to navigate them smoothly and confidently as you figure your new identity as a parent and honor your recovery and discover the baby got and all the things, then go to birthfulcourses.com to sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. These are as vital, if not more, than your childbirth education classes. So do it now before baby arrives. Let's get you postpartum ready. All right. Tara Langsdorf is here to share her birth story and some of her postpartum story as well. And even though things were far from what she had planned during her birth, she managed to show up for what was needed and focus on her process, as her husband did an amazing job of advocating for her. And I so appreciate how this story is the perfect example of how when everybody focuses on their thing, then you can navigate situations in a respected manner that can even minimize trauma. So the medical team focused on their medical stuff, making sure that things were closely observed and safe and monitored. And Tara focused on her physiology and going deep into the process, and her husband helped both sides communicate and work together while navigating giving birth in a hospital setting. So I'm so excited for you to hear this story that, as you can see, I'm getting way ahead of myself. Let's back up and welcome Tara to the show. Tara, it is so great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So great. And your story, you sent me an outline with like 3 pages worth of outline of what, point by point. I loved it. It's fantastic. But there is a lot to your story.
Yes. Well, I suppose I could start off at the very beginning when...
You know what? Before you do that, tell us just a little bit about yourself.
Oh, sure. So my name is Tara, and I'm a mother of a one-year-old boy named Leo. I have a big black dog who's about 80 pounds. My husband and I have been dating for over a decade now, but been married for 3 years. I live in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, and I enjoy kickball, camping, Zumba. My new favorite thing is snuggling with Leo on the weekend. I'm definitely a type A person. I like to research and plan for everything, including pregnancy. And so for the most part, my pregnancy went according to my plan until maybe about 36 weeks when things started to change a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And we will definitely get to that. But first, tell us like where your mind was at. So you planned so much. How did you plan before you were even pregnant? I see you were planning. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So I've been probably what we call baby crazy since I got married. And I promised my husband we would wait at least a year before we started trying. And so that and the financial impact of having a kiddo. Childcare is so expensive right now. So we wanted to make sure we were financially able to afford daycare and all of that. And I kind of, late spring, early summer is my favorite time of year. So I always thought it would be kind of cool to have a baby around that time. And so May about, well, I guess 2 years ago, we decided I'd go off birth control and, kind of figure out my cycles because I hadn't had a cycle probably since I was 18. So that was 14 years ago. So I wanted to figure out my cycle and then hope to get pregnant in about August so that I could have a May baby. And I know that's all really wishful thinking because you don't get to choose when you get pregnant. I'm well aware of that, but we figured that would be kind of a good timeline.
Did it happen?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I got all the apps. I got an ovulation predictor kit, like that you pee on all every morning. I got it all. And so, yeah, it
So
somehow worked out.
awesome. So what then when you're pregnant, what things, where was your mind in terms of giving birth and what your wishes were and what were you expecting or wanting to have?
Sure. So let me tell you, like since like the day I had gone off birth control, I started listening to your podcast, and I think I listened to every single episode within like 3 months. And
Whoa.
it helped me kind of figure out what I did want. And I pretty quickly realized I wanted a low intervention birth. I thought a water birth would be really an awesome experience. Yeah, I decided I really wanted to go with a midwife group as opposed to an OB, and so I kind of embarked on that path.
Okay, cool. And I did see you also read Iname.
I did, yes. One of my husband's cousins gave me a book on anime, and so reading that, it helped me not have that fear about giving birth and trying to give birth unmedicated. It was very empowering to hear those stories and read them.
Yeah, they're lovely. So I really appreciate that that book is half education, half stories. It's
Yeah, and I
nice.
think I only ended up reading the stories. There's so many of them. So I don't think I actually got to the second part, but I probably will whenever we decide on
Second time
number
around,
two.
yeah.
Yes.
Cool. So, in terms of during pregnancy, were there any surprises?
So we when I got pregnant initially, we went and saw a midwife, and we kind of weren't figured out sure about the date of conception, so they sent us for a dating ultrasound. And during that first real ultrasound, the tech said something along the lines of, "Oh, it looks like you have a bicornuate uterus. That just means it's got this cute little heart shape." And me and my husband were like, "Oh, that sounds cute. Okay." And then I swear that night I went home. And somehow, in like my Facebook news feed, something came up, and somebody was talking about having that condition and ha having a miscarriage or a stillbirth or something along those lines. And I immediately started freaking out, doing the worst thing possible, which is Googling. And my heart just sunk because there's a much higher chance of stillbirth, of fetal growth restrictions with it. And so that very ne next morning, the first thing I was on the phone with the doctor, and they said, "Yeah, we saw what came through. We're going to send you to maternal fetal medicine for a second level ultrasound." And that day, I was just, I think it's the only time during my pregnancy I cried. I had to leave work. I was so upset because I was like, if something were to happen, this is me. It's not just this one pregnancy. This could be if I have a misshapen uterus, that's never going to change, no matter how many times I get pregnant. So I
Yeah,
got really scared.
and I can f see how that is, definitely scary if you don't know this, right? It's not like, you look at your nose every day and go like, oh yeah, my nose is, this
I
is the
didn't even
shape.
know it was a possibility.
Frankly, I didn't even know it was a possibility well into my doula years. It's not that common.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if you have an episode on that,
I
but
don't, but I'm going to link some resources so that people,
perfect.
if they want to take a look, they can. So, and what happened next?
So I did go and get a second level ultrasound, and the doctor there basically said he didn't think it was bicornuate. He just thought it was arcuate, which is less severe. And he said, really, there was no way to test while I was pregnant. If I wanted to, after pregnancy, I could come in and they would do some additional tests where they'd do some contrast and look. But ultimately, after I gave birth, they basically said you had no issues that would be related to your uterine shape. So we don't even recommend doing that extra ultrasound because you had a normal birth.
And what a relief. Not at the
Oh,
moment, but
yes.
yeah, afterwards.
Yes. And unfortunately, I had some negativity from friends and family when I was going through all this freak out because, as I said, I was hoping for a pretty natural birth, and they were, I had some people really like kind of going off the deep end, encouraging me to get every intervention in the book at that point. But
How did you deal with that? Because that's, I know there, that I have an episode on dealing with friends and family, because it's tough. When you're pregnant, everybody has an opinion.
oh yeah, I mean, and I think it comes down to people just they have the best intentions for you. They want you to be the safest. They want the baby to be the safest. But I had people telling me I need to go to the hospital with the best NICU in the cities, that I should be seeing a maternal fetal medicine doctor, not a midwife. I mean, yeah, unfortunately, and that was really hard. I had a friend say, no water birth, no midwife, no the hospital I was choosing. All of that. And so, and I kind of eventually just had to shut it out. And my husband was really encouraging and just like, why don't we trust our doctors to tell us what we need to? And that maternal fetal medicine doctor was like, I'm fine with you staying with the midwife program at the hospital. And so we just proceeded. And honestly, I forgot about that period of my pregnancy until we started talking about this podcast. I totally forgot. So.
And that was sounds like really good approach of let's go with what our care providers say, who actually know, have experience and degrees and evidence information, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So then, was there anything else during pregnancy that we should mention?
In regards to like issues, I guess it's really common, but at the 20-week ultrasound, I had a low-lying placenta, which is actually, they said, really common. And they weren't really concerned at all. It just meant I had to get a second ultrasound later on. And basically, a lot of times it moves up on its own just because the baby's growing and the placenta just naturally moves. If it hadn't, that would have obviously been a big concern for placenta previa, but that went away.
And it is one of those things that is, I'm glad you mentioned it because that is, it is common, but it doesn't come up that often. And usually it does resolve by itself. And as the uterus and baby grows and everything gets bigger, it gets pulled up. But if it doesn't and stays like pretty much blocking the outlet or really close
Yes.
to the cervix, then that can be something to explore a cesarean because it's gonna, yeah. It can create problems.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm glad it
But
moved out of the way.
yeah, so other than that, I was low risk. I was part of what's called a centering group through the midwives. And basically, it's a little bit different than going to a normal OB or midwife appointment. What they do is they combine a group of up to 10 different couples who are due within the same month. And rather than having your individual 15-minute appointments, they kind of combine the group. And so you go into, and it's held like just in a conference room at the hospital, and you do your own weight and blood pressure. And then you spend maybe a quick 5 minutes with the midwife or the nurse, and they take the fundal measurement, heartbeat, maybe do a low tech ultrasound, But then the rest of the time is spent discussing symptoms, doing education, having visitors visit the group. And it's all held during what would your normal interval for having your checkups. So it was a really cool experience to be a part of this group of other first-time parents who were just kind of going through it all, so we could all kind of relate to each other and talk about what we were going through and share tips and experiences.
Yeah, and centering groups can be really cool in that you get a longer, so that makes your appointment becomes much longer, much more education-based.
Yeah.
How long were your appointments?
So they ran from like 5:30 till 7 in the evening, which was really nice too because it was after work, so you weren't missing work, and it was so like an hour and a half.
And it kind of starts building in your village since all of you guys are due at the same time.
It does. I remember my husband running into some of the other parents at the hospital because obviously we were, you know, giving birth around the same time. So that was kind of a cool experience.
Yeah. We have our midwifery group also has a centering practice here. And it
Love
is,
it.
Yeah, it's so enriching. Yeah,
absolutely. My husband jokes that we would have never had to go to our birth prep classes because so much of it was taken care of just during that group.
Right. Yeah. Did you feel it was empowering that you got to do like your own measurements and your own weight and your own like deal with your urine samples, all of that? Like,
oh yeah, I even did my own GBS test, my group B strep
test. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool because it, instead of it just all happening to you, you were involved in it. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out for Centering Care. I'm going to put links to that in the show notes too.
Awesome.
So, you know what? This is a perfect time for us to take a break before we get into the meat of things because I know what's coming because I have your notes.
All right.
We'll be right back. Great news, mighty ones. Now, Birthful listeners can get a free month trial at expectful.com. That's 2 more weeks of free meditation than before. And if you've been meaning to try meditation, then now is the perfect time for you to jump on this offer. Meditating is a great way to reset your nervous system and mindfully bring yourself back to calm. And this is really important because if your nervous system spends more time in high alert and doesn't get to go back to baseline often, then your body is in constant state of stress, which is not healthy. Meditating is a super easy way to make sure you break up those stress signals. The best part is that you don't have to sit for long hours to see the benefits. If you have 5 minutes, then you have time to meditate. And it becomes even easier when you use a meditation app like Expectful. I have tried other meditation apps, and I really like how the Expectful one is designed to address your pregnant or new parent needs by focusing on whatever you need at that moment. Whether it's better sleep, connection with baby and partner, embracing your identity, lessening stress, dealing with uncertainty, Expectful makes it super easy for you. And I gotta say, I really enjoy the voice of the person who reads the meditations. Go to expectful.com/birthful to sign up for a free 4-week trial and check it out for yourself. Yep, that's a free full month to try it out. And don't forget to add the /birthful so you can get that free full month. So that's expectful.com/birthful. And we're back talking with Tara Langsdorf on her about her pregnancy and birth story. So you're getting close to the end. What happened next?
Yeah. So so let's see. I mean, up until that point, most things had been going great. I was exercising. I was getting prenatal massages every 3 weeks, getting chiropractic care. We started our childbirth education classes with our doula, which was really awesome. It was 10 weeks of classes. There were 2.5 hours each week. And
that's a long class.
They were, but she was super thorough. And I mean, we went over spinning babies, pain management techniques. We did a birth rehearsal where we, you know, the women would practice breathing techniques and being in labor and our partners having to respond, talked about breastfeeding. Every class we watched one of the birth videos from one of her previous clients, obviously with their permission. And one of my favorite activities that we did was around birth plan and birth goals. And she obviously had us make up our birth plan or what we wanted our birth goals to be. But then one of the exercises she had us do, she had these cutouts of all these different cards with different things that could
Choices.
happen. Yeah, choices during birth. So it could be, I want a vaginal birth, I want a C-section, I want immediate skin to skin, I want delayed cord clamping, or who do I want to be present? And so she had you pick out all the cards that you wanted, and then she asked you to remove about five of them from that list and said, if there's five you couldn't get to happen, which five would you remove? And she kept doing that until we had maybe only five cards left. And it was at that time a good practice and really focusing on what is the most important, what do you value most about your birth. So
And
that'll come into play later.
okay, I am acutely aware with that card game because I do that with my clients too. I
Do
find
you?
it's a great, it's a great tool for because you don't know what's going to happen in birth, so
Right.
it starts forcing some flexibility into your plan for sure.
Right. And it's a good person thing for a person like me who likes things to kind of go according to my plan. So, yeah, it was good to kind of and two, I'm really glad for it because it really gave my partner, my husband, insight into what were the highest priorities for me and for us as a couple. So we had some really good conversations come out of that.
Very cool. So then what happened? That's the question. So then what's happened?
So then, the first kind of change, which isn't even necessarily related to what ended up happening to me, but around 32 weeks, I had a baby shower and I was wearing a dress. And I remember my mom being like, "Tara, your ankles are really swollen." And I kind of brushed it off. And then within that week, I would look down and I was like, "Yeah, they are really swollen." And from that point forward, I had to buy bigger shoes. I mean, it didn't look like I had ankles anymore. It they really started to show, which I know is a common part of pregnancy, but yeah, that was probably the first, I want to say, gripe I had about pregnancy because I loved pregnancy. I might be one of the weird ones, but I loved it. I loved every bit of it. I didn't ever have morning sickness. I was really fortunate up to that point. So then, at 36 weeks, I had one of our scheduled centering courses, and I kind of went in already nervous that my blood pressure was going to be a little high because it had kind of started creeping up in the previous classes we'd had. And my husband's like, "Well, the more you freak out that it's going to be high, the worse it's going to be."
Right.
And ultimately, that night, we ended up having to have the nurse of the group take me back into one of the exam rooms and use one of the exam room nursing cuffs because the ones they used at the centering group were just kind of those ones you can kind of transport and just maybe not the highest quality. So, if I sat really still and used the bigger cuff, it would fall kind of below the threshold for being of concern. So it was all right. And I had actually thought about brushing off my 37-week appointment because up until that point, I was feeling great. Everything was going great. I was like, "I don't need an extra appointment." Although after listening to any of your previous podcasts on preeclampsia, I'm now like, "No, never brush it off. That's the reason I have them." So,
Right, it's that peace of mind.
right.
Yeah.
And that's when exactly when things can start to go wrong. So I did have my 37-week appointment, and again, there were some issues with my blood pressure. And it took me sitting again really still and calmly, having that bigger blood pressure cuff. And so they said, "Over the weekend, we really want you to decrease your activity. Like, not even, don't even walk the dog. As much as you can be kind of sitting with your feet up, please do that. And then they did a urine test for protein. At that point, for protein in my urine, that test came back pretty normal. There wasn't any issues with that. But they wanted me to come back. So that was on a Friday. They wanted me to come back on that Monday for another test where they would do a biophysical, a non-stress test, and then do some more labs.
Mm-hmm. And they were just really, really focusing on making sure weren't developing preeclampsia or anything like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So after that weekend, I went in for my next appointment, and due to me really taking it easy, thanks, husband, I had lost 5 pounds over the weekend just from the water weight, from my high blood pressure and being off my feet. So at that point, we kind of discussed, well, maybe it would be best for me to work from home. And my boss was on board with that. And so I think that helped because then I could have my feet up. I'm doing less walking, that sort of thing. And my boss was totally on board with, you know, whatever baby needed. My biophysical test came back normal. The non-stress test came back just fine. So at that point, there were no concerns. My platelets were dropping a little bit. Historically, they'd been around 290. At that appointment, they were down to about 140. But I think at that point, they were still at normal range.
Okay. And so how did things continue with that? Did it even out? Did all that staying home help?
So, I mean, I had my 38-week appointment, and it was kind of the same story. My blood pressure continued to be high. They actually took me, we were right next to the labor and delivery department, so they took me to triage, had me lay down to take my blood pressure, and it was like right at the borderline of being over again. So they scheduled me again for a Monday non-stress test and blood draw to keep checking me because they were doing a really good job of monitoring me. They wanted to make sure I didn't end up with preeclampsia, or if I did, that they could immediately start taking action.
Mm-hmm.
So then that had been a Thursday. So on Sunday, I ended up doing more activity than I probably should have. And I ended up doing an impromptu maternity photo shoot. I'd been debating throughout my pregnancy whether I was going to do one, and I just never got around to it. And then I had a coworker post online that she had an opening for a mommy and me session. She did freelance photography on the side, and I was like, hey, is it okay if the baby is still inside? And she said, yeah. And I was like, I don't have one of those awesome, pretty dresses. And she's like, don't worry, I'll make one for you. You just tell me the color you want.
What?
And I was like, what? And I mean, it was for the very next day. It was Saturday. So she's like, yeah. And so it turned out, I know I sent you my pictures. She actually was just a long swath of fabric and ribbon. And that's just tied to me. That's not sewn. There's no sleeves, nothing. That's just fabric. Like,
oh, and yeah, I'll link them to the show notes. Of course, I'll post them. The pictures are gorgeous, people. Like,
yeah.
Amazingly gorgeous.
She is the most amazing photographer. Oh, she's awesome. But yeah, so she did those pictures Sunday evening, right around sunset, and they're phenomenal. Oh, they're awesome. So, but the funniest part about the story is that night at midnight is when my water broke. And the funny story about that is, so it was about midnight, and I woke up and coughed. And there was liquid. And, you know, I immediately jumped out of bed. It wasn't even enough to get on the bed. But I'm like, oh, great. Am I incontinent now? Like, what is going on? And so I run to the bathroom. Then I go to the closet and get, you know, one of those lovely overnight pads. And my husband was still downstairs awake watching television. And he's like, he called upstairs. And he's like, is everything okay up there? And I'm like, yep, everything's just fine. Don't worry about it.
So you didn't tell him right away?
You're like, I thought I'd peed.
Okay.
So I was like, I don't want to tell him I'm incontinent now.
This is embarrassing, right? Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I laid a towel down and went back to sleep. Then, like 2:30, I woke up and I had to pee again, and there was more of that, like what I thought was a little bit of loss of bladder, and then I was starting to feel like just occasional cramps, and I was like, I'm not comfortable, I'm not able to fall asleep, I'm gonna go downstairs and sit on the couch and watch television. And so I think I kind of dozed in and out, just barely stayed up watching crummy TV. Then around 6, I was like, well, I might as well start working if I'm gonna be up anyways. So I started working, and then I called the midwife. I was like, and this happened to be the midwife I had been working with ongoing. Her name was Carrie, and she's like, well, you have an appointment already today to do a non-stress test. When you come in, we can just test the liquid and find out if it is amniotic fluid. So I
And
said, okay.
how far along were you at this point?
I was 38 weeks and 6 days. So I didn't wake up my husband until he had woke up on his own, and I was like, hey, hon, by the way, this is going on. They're going to test and see if it's amniotic fluid. But by this time, because my non-stress test was around 8:45 in the morning, and so I was like, should we bring a bag with if we're going? Because the clinic is at the hospital as well. He's like, nah, don't worry about it. We're fine.
Famous last
So,
words.
right. So, we go for the non-stress test, and it takes a little bit longer than normal for him to kind of be as active as I wanted him to be during the test. And then finally go see the midwife, and she takes longer than she had planned on, because they have you kind of lay back for like 10 minutes for that liquid to pool, and then kind of run the liquid over a strip and see if it reacts. And sure enough, the midwife was like, yep, that's amniotic fluid. And it's probably a good thing anyways, because your blood pressures are so high, I would probably want you induced today anyways. So we're like, at that point, I was pretty sure it had been my water, because I was starting to think that they were probably contractions because they were coming at somewhat re regular intervals. So we're like, hey, can we go home and pack a bag? And she's like, sure, I'll be back in an hour. Well, we weren't back in an hour. I went home. I ended up working a little bit, trying to
What? Now, come on.
finish off emails. There's a lovely picture I didn't know my husband was taking of me, like, with my little laptop at the couch working away. And we kind of wanted to delay going to the hospital till we needed to. And our doula had always talked to us about, don't go too early. You're just setting yourself up for interventions, and you'll be more comfortable at home, all that good stuff. But there was construction on the major freeway leading to our hospital. So we're like, we don't want to get caught in traffic, because that would be the worst, to be in labor during rush hour. So contractions were getting closer together around 3, so we decided to go to the hospital then, because otherwise we felt like we probably wouldn't be able to leave till like 7. So our doula met us there, and I think I didn't get checked until about 6:30 that evening. And at that time, I was dilated to a 3, 80% effaced, -1 station. So they talked to us about, did we want to try and augment labor with Cytotec or Pitocin? And we said we kind of wanted to just let it kind of happened naturally, and they said, okay, but just remember that risk of infection kind of goes up at 24 hours after your water breaks, and that I'd risk out of water birth at 24 hours. So we acknowledged that, and we didn't, I never ended up typing up my birth plan. So we had this whiteboard in a room that we ended up writing like the different things we wanted on the little whiteboard in the room.
That's fantastic. Now hold on. We're gonna take a break. We'll be right back. Breastfeeding, it may be natural, but that sure does not mean it's easy. It's a learning process for both you and baby, and like most learning processes, it takes a lot of trial and error. However, this trial and error can sometimes come with a lot of crying, and not necessarily only from your baby. Help lessen the crying and frustration by arming yourself with some solid knowledge. A great way to prepare for this is by taking the Simply Breastfeeding online class created by breastfeeding experts Cindy and Jana. In their class, you'll learn to recognize what your baby is telling you and how to meet your baby's needs starting in the very first hour after birth. You'll also understand the basics of breastfeeding and be able to return to them if you encounter difficulties, and you'll feel confident knowing the answers to most frequently asked questions. Lessen your anxiety and frustration and relax knowing you've got this. Go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding to learn more. And as a Birthful listener, you get 15% off if you use the code Birthful when you register. Go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding or click the link on the show notes to get you on your way. And we are back talking with Tara. And so you guys made it to the hospital. They check you. You are 80% of face minus one station.
Right. It's not that great a progress, I'll be honest. But at that point, hey, I hadn't been working that hard.
Well, and that's, you know, for early labor, you haven't been checked before. It hasn't been going on for so long. And you were saying that, how were the sensations at that point? Were just still kind of crampy, or were they requiring your attention and making
you
stop?
They were starting to require my attention. I remember when the midwife got there, we had been talking real briefly, and then all of a sudden I kind of had to put up my hand and stop her. And at that point, she kind of looks at the doula and my husband and was like, oh, has this been going on for a little while? And they're like, yeah. And so I think at that point she's like, oh, okay. So she is having legitimate contractions. Yeah. And I think that's maybe why they were suggesting Pitocin or Cytotec, is because they were concerned about the progress I'd made thus far and whether or not I was having good productive contractions.
Mm-hmm. And so you were putting all your stuff on the whiteboard.
Yes.
Your birth goals.
And then at one point we called to the nurse's station and nobody was showing up. So finally my husband walked out there and was like, we've been calling the nursing station. Well, they figured out that the buttons on my bed weren't working to call the nursing staff. And so what's funny is during the birth education classes with my doula, she'd done this birth rehearsal. And so some of the things she would do for these couples is she'd walk into the room and pretend something. And the husband would have to kind of redirect whoever was entering in the room and make sure that the wife's needs were being taken care of and that, you know, people were respecting her and her little space. And so the funniest thing is during some of my contractions, I had two maintenance guys working over my head, trying to figure out the connections to the bed. And I'm going through contractions and they are just shooting the breeze, talking over me. And my doula could not help but laugh at that and was like, I guess I'm going to have to add that to my birth rehearsal of potential interruptions during a birth.
Anything can happen.
It really can.
Did it mess you up, or were you able to stay in focus even though
I didn't care at that point. And truly, you know, at that point, well, I, you know, was working through contractions. They weren't as bad as they were going to get. Mm-hmm. So during that time, I was doing lots of different positions. We walked the halls. I really enjoyed being in the bathroom over the toilet for some of the contractions with my husband there. Finally, I think around 8 o'clock, I decided I wanted to do for them to fill the tub, because there was this beautiful water birth tub in the room that I was in. That's kind of just in the middle of the room. And so they filled that, and it was actually so deep, my husband had to hold my shoulders in order for me to not float away mm-hmm. into this big, deep tub. And then they had me get out of the tub so they could do another blood test and check my blood pressure. And about 9:30, my platelets were getting low. So they were about 102. And so that's when they gave me the diagnosis of preeclampsia. So at that point, they wanted continuous fetal monitoring. And they really pushed for, at that point, they wanted me to have an epidural. But we asked for any alternative options, and we ultimately decided to go with nitrous. And their hope was that by using something to help manage the pain, that my blood pressure would not continue to rise. So at that point, it was like obviously the medical needs outweighed the desire for a medication-free birth. So we decided to try nitrous. And I'll be honest, at this point, my memory of what happened for probably the next almost 12 hours is very sparse. I don't know if it's related to how I was coping with the pain or if it was effects from the nitrous, but I have very few memories personally of the time from about 10 p.m. until maybe 10 a.m. So I don't know if that's a common thing amongst people who have nitrous or if it's just me.
And it can, some people also have blurs in terms of when they get deep into transition and all the, it's hard, you're so in it that it's hard to know what's going on. And, coupled with the nitrous, who knows?
Sure. So I oh, and an interesting about thing about nitrous. So you have to have it on your face when you're inhaling and when you're exhaling, because if you exhale into the room, people in the room will also be impacted by nitrous. And I had a nurse who was allergic to nitrous. So I had to be
That's no
really
pressure at all, right?
right.
Yeah.
So I had to have that thing attached to my face, and you have to breathe really deeply to like suck the nitrous in because it's kind of a passive system. And I quickly became a little bit dependent on it because I had to have that. I felt like I had to have the mask attached to my face so I didn't impact anybody in the room. And then nitrous is kind of only affects you while you're breathing it. So if you take it away, you might feel that next contraction. And so I just. It got to the point where my doula and my nurse and husband were like, you need to take some breaks from it, because I was using it so heavily. They started IV fluids around 11:30, and then they started discussing taking magnesium sulfate to help with my preeclampsia, and it's used to prevent seizures, but the side effects can be sleepiness, dizziness, nausea, blurred vision, and it can slow labor by decreasing contractions. So,
Did you get it?
I, well, I didn't, I honestly don't know that I answered. I praise to my husband. He, asked, could we delay this? Is there any, is it necessary right now? Because he was a perfect advocate for me for this whole thing. And they said, it's not necessary right now. If her labs come start falling again, her blood pressure increases, we're going to recommend it. And we're definitely recommending it after she delivers. So we were able to not do that. And I'm grateful for that. At that time that he asked them to stall it and that they were kind of agreeable that it wasn't absolutely necessary at that point. Then around 2 in the morning, so this is a day and 2 hours after my water had broken, I ended up getting transferred to the OB team at the hospital. Our midwife team and OB team work really closely together, and at that point I had been diagnosed with HELLP syndrome, which is a severe form of preeclampsia. And so they checked me and I
Did
was
Sorry,
Oh,
did that diagnosis change anything in terms of the care, what they were suggesting to proceed with?
no, it kind of stayed in line. They discussed magnesium sulfate again and agreed to check my labs in about 2 hours to see where things were at. They checked me. I was dilated to a 500% effacement, station zero. And then they talked about having an epidural placed. And we were like, no, we want to avoid an epidural. And they basically, I remember they actually called the anesthesiologist over. And this part I do remember clearly, this very kind man's face telling me that they didn't have to give me the epidural medication, but they at least needed to place it. Because if they could not place the line for the epidural then, and my platelets fell below 100, that I could no longer get an epidural. And then if I ended up needing a C-section, that I'd have to be put under general anesthesia. And my husband was like, yeah, I know she'd want to be alert if she had one. So he was in support of one, and they ultimately needed me to consent to it, and I did. And then right before they were about to place it, they asked me again. They're like, okay, so we're going to place this epidural line. And I'd already forgotten the previous conversation. I was like, no, I don't want an epidural. So they had to have the conversation a
Oh.
second time with me. But they didn't start running any medication through it. They just placed it. And honestly, I don't remember it being placed. Like, I don't remember pain of it being placed or anything like that. So obviously the guy was pretty good. So had that line placed around 2 a.m. Then at around 6:15 in the morning, I was dilated to a 7, and somehow I became less effaced. I don't know how that happens. Probably different people checking me.
And that's such a huge point to make that if there's this, all these numbers that we go by, there's no specific ruler to measure. It's depending on whoever's hands there and their idea of what something is, right?
So I continued to decline any augmentation at that point and magnesium sulfate. And then around 10 a.m., I was dilated to an 8. I was having contractions every 2 to 7 minutes. And the OB at that point was recommending an epidural bolus and Pitocin. She wasn't exactly ha happy with the progress I was making. And she wanted to start the epidural just because of my exhaustion. At that point, I'd been up for well over 24 hours without any sleep. And so at that point, I finally kind of gave in and said, okay, let's start an epidural. Let's not do Pitocin yet at this point. And let's try and get me a little bit of a nap. To try and rest up to hopefully continue powering through labor. So I got about an hour nap, but unfortunately, during that nap, I only had like a handful of contractions. And they, so my labor had essentially stopped at that point. And so by 11, I decided if I'm going to continue this, I need to agree to Pitocin. So they started Pitocin, and I immediately threw up. And then, but we started on the lowest dose possible. And then as time progressed, I kept saying, okay, you can increase it, you can increase it, to try and get my contractions back up to where they needed to be so that my labor could be productive.
Yeah, and PIT is also like, I mean, nitrous is very short half-life. So while you're breathing it goes, like, if you don't breathe it goes away very quick. PIT is similar, not as fast, but similar in the sense that it can leave your system very quickly. So, and upping it or bringing it down can be done very, very quickly. So,
That.
yeah. So that is, it's extremely adjustable. And
Okay.
So that's why they can start it super low. And then there's a maximum of amount of medicine you can have in a certain amount of time. So if they're increasing it by like 1 unit or 2 units every 30 to 45 minutes, they can only get up to a certain, you know, like 30 units or 40 units. Depends on the ratio, depends on the hospital, depends on how much you've gotten. And they want to have transition-like contraction pattern, which is contractions every 2 to 3 minutes, hopefully lasting a minute or more. So they'll keep upping it until you get to that, hopefully. And then once you get to that, they can't, and if your body's responding, they can't up it more because they don't want to be hypertonic, like too many contractions and affect the baby in stress. So it's like, it's a little bit of a tight rope, but it reacts so quickly back and forth that but I'm glad that they were very much involving you in the care, and it seems throughout this whole experience of a collaborative process.
It really was. And I think that's why around 2 p.m. they wanted to put in like an internal contraction monitoring, because before they just had the external fetal monitor, but they wanted to put in a monitor that would kind of go in alongside the baby and monitor those contractions so they could tailor the Pitocin to get me to those contractions that you were talking about, like that perfect labor sort of.
Yeah, transition pattern.
Yeah.
Or active labor pattern. And the intrauterine, you know, catheter, that's another thing that not many people know, that so if they're monitoring your belly, you have two monitors externally, right? One's for baby's heartbeat and the other one's for your contractions. But that one just picks up contractions. It does not measure intensity at all. And it is why you might see it in a graph and it might be like little low, little low, little low. And then you move and then they get higher. It's not necessarily that it correlates to the intensity of what you're feeling. It's just how it's picking up the change of tightness in your belly and muscles versus not being tight.
Okay.
So the intrauterine pressure catheter, they call it an IUPC, which is what you're describing, goes in between sort of baby's head and the uterine wall, and they can really measure force of how tight that uterus is squeezing with the contractions.
Oh, okay.
All these fancy things, right?
Yeah. So at that point, the doctor said that they'd give me about 2 hours of adequate labor, and if there wasn't a change, they were going to strongly recommend a C-section. Now, my doula happened to count that day, and they suggested and or recommended a C-section 8 times to me that day, which feels like a lot to me.
It does. And also, to me, it speaks to back to that collaborative care that you were having. Because they were recommending it and strongly recommend it and whatever, but they weren't like, no, this is what we need to do.
Right.
They were still, and considering that you were diagnosed with HELP, like that to me, even though they said it 8 times, seems very patient-centered maternity care.
Right.
Because I've been in instances where without a HELP diagnosis, it's been like, we've gotten to the point, this is what we need to do. There's not really of giving you a choice or sure, a say in that opinion. Yeah.
And I think, you know, honestly, most of the time, my husband did most of the talking when it came to decision making, and everything he did was exactly what I would have wanted. So he was an amazing advocate. And my doula as well.
Go husband. Yes.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
And it's funny because this would not have been his choice in birth. He prefers high intervention. he's like, if lasers could take out a baby when I was pregnant, I'd choose lasers. So that's that's him. But he knew what I wanted and was like, this, you know, you get to choose because it's your body. So he was awesome.
Mm.
So we didn't see the OB that much throughout the day. The maternity ward was completely full. It had been a full moon, and overnight there had been a storm. So there were lots of people in labor, and we kept asking for the OB to come because I was, by like 4 or 5 o'clock, I was starting to feel really low blood sugar. I hadn't eaten since lunchtime the day before. And like, that shaky feeling when you're like, I haven't eaten in a while, I need to eat something. I was getting that and just feeling kind of nauseous from not eating. And so finally around 6 o'clock, the OB showed up, and there was this standoff that happened between my husband Ian and with our doula and the OB over whether or not I could eat. And they were, doing their best to advocate for me. At one point, my doula started quoting, something from, that laboring women should be allowed to eat. And the OB got quite mad at her and was like, "You are not here for medical advice. You are here just to support, so do that." And I later found out that they were considering kicking my doula out of the hospital at that point. She was trying her best to support me. So they had been going back and forth for a while, and finally the OB looks at me and is like, "What do you want?" And the reason they had been keeping me from having food at that point was because if I ended up with a C-section, they didn't want a risk of me throwing up or choking or something like that.
It's a risk of aspiration.
Yes,
So
that's the
it
word.
is a very small risk, but if it happens, it's a very nasty situation. And it's like, if, so it goes, if you eat and you then need an emergency cesarean and they can't get, and you have to be put under, and you already had a catheter, so that minimizes that. But if they have to, you put you under full anesthesia and then you throw up, there's a chance that you will aspirate your contents of what you're throwing up, and then that can certainly lead to nasty things. But the risk, when I've talked to Rebecca Decker about the evidence on that, and I'll link to the podcast, it's actually you have a higher risk of getting struck by lightning than aspirating, especially now that epidurals are, before when for cesareans, you would need to knock everybody out because
Sure.
anesthesia hadn't come so, hadn't c advanced so much. The risk was higher, but that's why I'm saying you already had the catheter to, you most likely wouldn't need to be put under. But it is a risk assessment anyway, but
Sure.
that's where it comes from. It's the risk of aspiration.
That makes sense. Yeah. My husband was like, I'm sure you guys perform hundreds of emergency cesarean sections where people have eaten. Because that's the point of an emergency is you didn't plan on it. And so they kept going back and forth. And finally the OB looks at me and I was like, because I just kind of was watching the tennis match from the bed. And she looks at me and she's like, "Well, what do you think?" And I was like, "I feel like you're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. If I don't eat anything, I'm not going to have the strength to continue to labor and to push out a baby. And so I will need a C-section at that point. But if I can get something to eat, I can get a little strength, I can keep doing this." And so finally she's like, "Well, let me check you again." And I just before she had walked in, I had said I started feeling rectal pressure, like I had to poop. And sure enough, at that point I was 10 centimeters.
Yay!
So she looked at me and she was like, "Well, I guess we kind of wasted our time with that argument." And she's like, "You can have a little bit to eat, not tons," which I didn't, I wasn't hungry for tons. I think I ate half a cracker, a spoonful or two of applesauce, and some apple juice, and that's all I needed. But she's like, "We can start getting ready for you to push." And so by this point, it's about 7 o'clock, And in walks the midwife I'd been working with throughout my whole pregnancy. And she gave like the most amazing pep talk. She was telling me that she'd been kind of monitoring my chart for the past 2 days and kind of watching everything I had been through, and just I'm getting emotional just talking about it, but like how powerful I was and how strong I was and how great I was gonna do. And it was amazing. I mean, she came in on her own time. She's like, I just dropped off my kid at dance class and I wanted to stop in and give you some encouragement. So she's an amazing woman.
And what good timing.
Right?
Yeah.
It really couldn't have been better because it was just before I started pushing. And another thing I had was at each of my baby showers, I had the women, my friends and family, and outside my father, write little affirmations down on post-it notes for my husband and doula to read me to help kind of motivate me and push me through. So they read those too during my labor
Oh, I
and during
love
the pushing
that.
phase. Yeah, it was really cool to just have all that woman strength and for my dad too.
And that
Just
supportive family, like you don't feel alone if you've got all these people,
right.
right? Just a reminder of those wishes. That's so sweet.
Yeah, so that was really awesome, and I'm saving them because I'll use them for the next one too. But so I was lucky in that, because I had the epidural, but I was still had really good control of my lower body. I was able to get into hands and knees. I was able to turn myself. I really enjoyed being on hands and knees. I felt like that was a really good position for me. But unfortunately, after a while, they were having a trouble keeping the monitors in place and getting good readings. So they kind of ended up telling me I need to switch to my back. And so I did. So I ended up doing for the bulk of my pushing stage, had this bar that goes over the bed, and I, braced my feet on either end, and then they'd wrap a towel around it, and I'd pull the towel in. And so I ended up doing most of my pushing in that position. And I remember thinking at one point, because I had the, most encouraging push nurse and my doula and my husband's, and they were great cheerleaders. And I remember them, after a good push, they'd be like, that was so great. You made great progress. And after an hour, I was like, they could be telling me anything. I could be making no progress and I would never know. I have no idea if I'm actually am making progress. They might just be nice
Oh, were
to
you feeling by that point like, what the heck is going on? How much longer do I have to do? What were
Yes.
you feeling? Yeah.
Yeah, I had no concept of time. Like, I didn't know what time it was. It just felt like it was taking forever. And like, you don't know exactly how it's supposed to feel. So you're like, I hope I'm pushing correctly. And they'd want me to, like, I don't know, breathe out for 10 seconds or something, and or hold my breath for 10 seconds. And I'm like, I can't hold my breath that long. So I couldn't follow them. But then I remember at one point they're like, reach down, you can feel his head. And I reached down and I could feel his head, and I was like, okay, I'm making progress. Like, this is happening. I'm gonna be able to do this. So I kept pushing, and finally, at about 9:40, well, at 9:41, he was delivered. I guess the cord had been wrapped around his neck once, and they were able to fix that while I was in the process of pushing. They did immediate skin to skin. I remember them saying to my husband, "Oh, do you want to cut the cord?" And I was like, "Wait, we want delayed cord clamping." And they're like, "We have delayed it too." Because I had no concept of time. So he got the cord. And then he was doing some grunting, and they were concerned about his ability to breathe. So they kind of took him to the warmer to try and do some suction. And ultimately, it took him to the special care nursery with my husband to just monitor that for an hour or two. And I guess while they were at the special care nursery, they did a blood test and he had low blood sugar. And they're like, "Do you want donor milk or formula?" And my husband was listening because he said donor milk. And so he chose right. Well, actually, his first was, "Can we take him back to mom to try and be breastfed?" Good on husband. And they're like, "No, he needs it like immediately." Because of his blood sugar level. So he got some donor milk. And then while they were away, I delivered the placenta. I remember it wasn't coming out right away. And they're like, "You need to push." Well, I think it was pretty lackluster, my pushing at that point. Because I
Yeah,
really don't.
well, now come on. You've been so the whole thing, your water had broken not the night before, but the day the previous night at
Right.
midnight. So,
Right.
and now it's 9:41 p.m. You're
Right.
almost getting to 2 days.
Right, exactly. So, and there's a difference between a placenta and a baby. So I wasn't really motivated. So they needed, I think they did a little bit of traction, to get it out. And I ended up with a second degree tear, although I expected the pain from that to be worse than it was, and it really didn't bother me that much. I mean, I was sore from pushing out a baby, but not like pain from a wound. So that kind of surprised me. So they stitched me up and then they administered the magnesium sulfate bolus at that point, after they'd finished stitching me up. And I remember looking over at the nurse who was putting in the IVs all in me, and I looked at her and I was like, "Is this supposed to sting?" And she goes, "It might sting a little bit." And I was like, "It burns like acid in my veins. Take it out." And she's like, "Nope, I can't take it out." And I started bawling. I think that was probably the most painful part of the whole process. And my doula, luckily, was still there. And she came over and she massaged my feet while I just bawled. I'm sure it was partly because my emotions were obviously very high at that point, but yeah, that magnesium was nasty. Looking back, I can see why I needed it, but I just remember it being awful. And so finally, they get once the bolus was over, I had just a normal IV of it, and that was more manageable at a lower concentration. And they had taken out the catheter, although I wish I had told them to just leave it in because they had to pump me with so many fluids while I got that magnesium sulfate that I had to go to the bathroom every 20 to 30 minutes all night long. So after being up for 2 days, I didn't get any good sleep. And I told the nurse, I was like, "I really would love a shower." And it was such a production because I'm still coming off of the
Nitrous or the no the
epidural.
yeah. Oh, right. Yes.
And so they're
Your
like,
legs.
they got two nurses. They had to put like this glove up to my armpit so that I could continue to get the magnesium. They had to get a shower chair. We finally get all that together into the bathroom. We turn on the shower. There was no hot water in the shower. It wouldn't work at all. So I did not get a shower after all.
I'm so sorry you were denied your shower.
I know it's like all you want when you're feeling so gross. And I remember them being like, "Okay, you need to call the nurse every time you have to go to the bathroom." And like I think after the fourth or fifth time, I was like, "I'm not calling the nurse anymore. I would just go myself." Because like I said, I had really good control under, excuse me, of my lower half. So that was awesome.
When did baby come back? When did you were able to join baby?
So he came back, I want to say like an hour or two after he was delivered, with my hubby. And looking back, like I said, I wish I had had the catheter because just left in. I don't even know if that was a possibility, but I think I would have held him more, but the production of getting him in and out of the bassinet and going to the bathroom every few minutes was not the greatest. So I think, he stayed wrapped up sleeping in the bassinet more than I probably would have liked.
And they tend to take out the catheter right as the head, like baby's being born, so they give you the most space. And
I could see that. Yeah.
It
That
kind of
makes
needs
sense.
to make sense for it to come out.
Yeah, I could see that. Or I was wondering too, like during the getting stitched up, if, that would probably get in the way a little bit. But anyways, so yeah, then he came back and it took us another almost 24 hours from when he was delivered to actually get into a postpartum room because off the hospital was so full. So we didn't get a shower. Neither me nor my husband got a shower for like 24 hours.
Twenty-four hours after he was born.
After he was born, yeah.
Okay.
So,
Well,
and
good microbiome.
right, exactly. So, and he was, after that, he was really healthy. They kept doing blood sugar checks on him after that.
How big was
Like,
he?
he was 6 pounds, 8 ounces, and 20 inches long.
Okay.
And one thing I learned that I would do differently next time. So, right as we were about to leave on the second day, they did another blood sugar test, and his blood sugar was low. And so they're like, well, we can't do, let you go yet. You're gonna have to stay until after the next feeding. And so for that next like two to 3 hours, I kept him skin to skin that whole time on my chest. And after his feeding, they did the test, and it was the highest it had been since he'd come out. So I would definitely advocate for that skin to skin because I think that really helps him, probably preserved his calories and his energy to not have to do all those extra things.
And so breastfeeding after that first donor milk, things you were able to breastfeed him and everything went well?
Well, not quite. It took probably, so I would try and nurse him, and then I would pump. And I don't even think I started getting any colostrum for at least 24 hours. And like I remember them teaching my husband how to like get the little tiny droplets of colostrum out of the pump to like feed him. And he was being fed through an SNS tube at the time. And like every milliliter, we were like so excited to tell the lactation consultant. And I don't think my milk really came in for at least 3 days. We saw a lactation consultant the following week, and he wasn't gaining as much as they had hoped. And so they sent me back home with lactation tea and an herb and telling me to keep pumping, and they like set a goal for how much they wanted him to gain between the Monday we went in and the Thursday when they had like a lactation group, a free lactation group at the hospital. And I remember I went to that lactation group on that Thursday, and he actually surpassed what the goal they had set, and I again just cried. And it's like I don't know why I'm crying. And the woman was totally understanding, and she's like, it took a while for you to get here, and obviously had those concerns, but I'm really proud where he was exclusively breastfed for a year, and we still nurse in the morning and at night, and so we overcame that initial difficulty, and he had a shallow latch, and I had flat nipples and all of that. But we overcame it.
And the testament to, shallow latch, flat nipples, epidural, and magnesium sulfate, which pumped you with tons of fluids, which make things more difficult. Like, you did have some obstacles. Mildly saying that. And you figured out. and he figured it out. So good for you guys.
Yeah, and it's been the most amazing relationship. I think I'm just grateful that we were able to overcome all that.
And not to say that if it's different for everybody. So I'm not poo-pooing on people who can't, because
Oh,
I didn't,
absolutely.
right? Yeah, we couldn't get over the lip tie and the thing, and it was I exclusively pumped. Not
Wow,
exclusively.
good
I
for you.
not exclusively. I had to supplement somewhere, but pump for 6 months, and then that's when I was like, okay, that's it, I'm done.
Kudos to you.
Yeah, because she wouldn't take a bottle. So everybody's got their own journey, but I will recognize that the obstacles you had and overcame them.
I would highly recommend. They make these little adhesive wound care sort of nipple healing magic devices. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say brand names or anything,
Yeah,
but
go for it.
there's like a it's like a medulla nipple adhesive pad, and it's for wound. I guess they use them in the army. It's like w wet wound healing,
Yes.
and they work magic on sore, cracked nipples. I mean, I remember my husband looking at me that first week and being like the way I would cringe when he was latching, and my husband's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I will be," but that did wonders, and you can like wear them for 24 hours, and you just keep reapplying them after each breastfeeding. And I even ended up using them again a second time a couple months later when I was starting to get nipple pain, and they were awesome.
I'm gonna look for those and link them in the show notes. I
Perfect.
had not heard about these. Oh, I love every new thing that is provides so much comfort.
I
Yes.
think they're called like hydrogel something.
That
So,
makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I use similar we have something similar just for burns around the house, and I know they work. They're miraculous how good they hydrate, and yeah, so that sounds fantastic. So Tira, how is and I know we're like over time and it doesn't matter. We'll just keep going because why not? For a little bit. How was so okay, you've done all this. You said one of the things you would do differently would be do more skin to skin. Is there anything else that was really surprising to you that you would do differently, that positive or negative?
So ultimately I guess I forgot to get back to my that little card game we played with my doula. I remember at one point my husband and I joked. We looked at our whiteboard and we're like, "Well, I guess we can cross out about half of that stuff. Water birth, non-medicated, no Pitocin, working with a midwife. Like we could cross half the things out that I had wanted." But he's like, after it was all said and done, we looked at it and he's like, "Tara, we got those things that we put down that we wanted at the very beginning. Those like last 5 to 10 things that we wanted, that immediate skin to skin, that he was able to be present, that I was able to have a vaginal birth, that I was able to breastfeed. A lot of those things that I had wanted, I still got." And so that was a really powerful experience for me to have that realization that no, I didn't get every little thing I wanted. No, I didn't get that, cool story about the water birth or whatever. But I got a lot of what was ultimately the most important to me. And obviously the very most important, healthy mom, healthy baby. The only thing I would do differently, I wish I had remembered to tell my doula or my husband that I wanted pictures during labor and during delivery. So that's one thing I'll be doing differently next time is to make sure somebody is on hand with a camera to capture those moments, especially given some of my amnesia from the event. I would want that to be captured.
And any last parting words for listeners out there, whether it's a recommendation or, in terms of approaching labor, approaching birth, how it transformed you, anything?
listen to this podcast. Honestly, this podcast, I think, taught me so much about birth and the options that are available out there. And I do remember that you did have a previous episode on help as well with another mom. And so I think I learned more from the work you have done with experts and other moms, than just about anything else.
And you're gonna make me cry. That's so amazing. It's like, yay! I'm so glad. And actually, it makes me, it makes me feel really glad that you listened to the help episode before you were diagnosed with it, because that also informed, like, you realize how serious that diagnosis was, and also that you were still within the care of your providers and being an active participant, and like you were all working together, but it wasn't like you were set on denying things. You were just making sure, seeing what leeways and options you had is what it seems to me.
Right. And, I think you're right about the working collaboratively with the staff. I remember afterwards I had a postpartum appointment with my midwife and kind of was telling her about my experience and was like, yeah, that OB recommended a C-section 8 times. And she's like, she's actually one of the most progressive OBs on the floor and most pro midwife and least interventions. So you were probably actually very fortunate that that's the OB you had that day working with you, because she was willing to. And she goes, honestly, afterwards, she came up to me the next day or next time she saw me, and she's like, Tara got that vaginal birth. And she was genuinely happy for you and excited for you. So that was a really good feeling.
And yeah, I mean, we know the system is not perfect, sometimes far from it. But we do need to remember that the people that work in it are caring people that have hearts, and they got there for a reason. They're doing this for a reason. So even though sometimes they're like painted in a corner, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just really like, I just want to go get my I'm late for dinner, which is hopefully not the OB you anybody ends up with. But I am really thrilled that, like your midwife said, that you ended up with this OB that was willing to create that space and walk the walk with you to try as much as possible, give you your wishes, and ultimately you guys were able to do it in a obviously super healthy way for everybody, in a safe way for everybody.
Exactly.
Yay. Thank you so much. Yeah, no. Yes, 'cause usually people who come to tell the stories, they tend to be every story is different, but I like hearing also stories that had struggles and still were beautiful experiences.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know people sometimes have some birth trauma and things didn't go the way they wanted, but honestly, I don't think I would have done anything different.
Enjoy your baby. Thank you
I
so
will.
much.
Thank you. It's a dream come true that I got to be on here.
It's been lovely having you here and listening to your story. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Mighty ones, check out the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. I'm also on Facebook or Twitter as @birthful, so come say hi. And if you're in the last few months of pregnancy and feeling unprepared for what's to come, then do go sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. Let's get you postpartum ready. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the Birthful Patreon supporters, and by the wonderful people at Expectful and Simply Breastfeeding. To best support this podcast, support its sponsors, and get discounts while you're at it, go to expectful.com/birthful to get a free 1 month trial, and go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding and use the code BIRTHFUL for 15% off their breastfeeding class. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused specifically on parents. Download the free Parent on Demand app for Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me Wednesday when I'll be talking to a new maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful podcast. Thanks so very much for listening.